From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Welcome to this week's edition of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. A couple of newsworthy items. On September 7th, the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee held a long-awaited confirmation hearing on the renomination of Postal Regulatory Commission member Robert Taub. It is assumed his nomination will be fast-tracked as his term expires in mid-October. Commissioner Mark Acton's term also expires in October. However, President Biden has yet to make a nomination to fill Acton's position. We also await two nominees to the Postal Board of Governors. In addition, over the past week, a National Labor Relations Board arbitrator and the Postal Regulatory Commission have independently weighed in on the so-called Delivering for America plan, aka DFA. The National Labor Relations arbitrator concluded that the Postal Service failed to work with local Utica, New York APWU branch when the agency accessed postal employees as part of its sorting and delivery center initiative. The arbitrator, as part of his grievance award, characterized the Postal Service's actions vis-a-vis employee engagement as, quote, illogical and self-contradictory. Finally, the Postal Regulatory Commission, as part of its public inquiry into the Delivering for America plan, posed a series of on-the-record questions to the Postal Service at the request of the Greeting Cards Association. Specifically, the Regulatory Commission asked the Postal Service whether the 2021 volume projections on which the DFA was in part justified were still valid. Apparently, since the Delivering for America plan was first implemented, the Postal Service also soured on a number of potentially revenue-producing retail initiatives. The Regulatory Commission inquired as to the magnitude of the revenue assumed from the implementation of these initiatives. In response to a previous Postal Regulatory Commission inquiry, the Postal Service conceded that it had yet to prepare cost savings estimates attributable to its network realignment and had not analyzed, quote, the extent to which service will improve, end quote. Therefore, the Postal Regulatory Commission has followed up on that line of inquiry by asking upon what basis the agency can assert that the Postal Service will achieve its service standards, enhance operational precision, and improve efficiency, and, of course, reduce costs significantly. As NAPS has done thus far, we will be monitoring very closely the Postal Regulatory Commission's proceedings in its detailed examination of the Delivering for America plan. Now for something completely different. Let's turn to this week's NAPS Chat guest. I am pleased to welcome Tammy Flanagan, founder of Retire Federal and Senior Benefits Director for the National Institute of Transition Planning. Tammy is a member of the National Association of Retired Federal Employees and has provided retirement training through NARF's Federal Benefits Institute. In addition, Tammy has authored a series of columns on retirement planning for the Government Executive Magazine and co-hosts For Your Benefit radio program on the Federal News Network, and also co-hosts a new podcast entitled Plan Your Federal Retirement. Thanks for joining me on Naps Chat, Tammy.
Well, thank you, Bob. It's a pleasure and an honor to be speaking with you. I really appreciate the invite.
And I thank NARF, John Hatton over at NARF, for making this introduction.
Yep, he put us together.
The issue I want to touch upon is the growing number of retirees within the public sector, particularly the Postal Service, that have elected to have encore careers, that is, working after they actually retire from federal service, postal retirees included. The Bureau of Labor Statistics projects that about a third of those aged 65 to 74 will be employed at the normal historical retirement ages, when our parents might have retired. Could you talk about the size of this population?
I wish I had some statistics for you to tell you how many are doing it, but I know just from my own experience, I don't think retirement is the same meaning as it was for our parents. Because I keep asking myself, you know, when are you going to retire? You're already 65, going on 66. But when you're still able to do things and you still get satisfaction from the work that you do, you still want to kind of keep doing it. You know, I always say, what else am I going to do? Play dominoes every day. So I do think a lot of our retirees have opportunities in front of them, whether it's something to do, whether it's something to pursue. Like, for instance, we have a lot of retirees up in Virginia, where I used to live, who work at the golf course just to have something to do and have some free golf time, you know, on the course. But then we have a lot of other retirees who go back into full-time work or become consultants and do more or less full-time employment. And that's fine. You know, our federal retirees have that option that they have lifetime health coverage when they leave the government. They have a pension that provides them the bulk of the income that they'll need in retirement. So this extra income, this encore career, oftentimes provides them extra income where they might be able to delay Social Security a little longer. They might be able to delay taking money out of their retirement savings too soon. And that allows all those benefits to grow and become more valuable when they finally fully retire.
You know, as people live longer, their work career extends longer, but they may get a bit, I'd say, burnt out in their occupation that they had spent the past 30, 35 years doing. So they want to do something completely different. Do you think that's an incentive to get a job after you retire?
I do. I was talking to a friend just today. She retired from the State Department, and I had helped one of her friends who was also a State Department employee. And this woman would have made out a month retirement if she would have only worked another 2 years. Because at age 62 under FERSH, her benefit would have been computed at a higher amount. And I asked her, I said, Georgia, why did she leave when she did? And she goes, oh, she was just so stressed out and she really needed a change. It was almost causing her physical problems. So she retired and went back to work, and she's doing something just for fun, but she's getting paid for it. And she is so much happier. I don't think she misses the extra money that she would have received had she stayed those extra 2 years. So I think there's something to be said for a change in scenery, a change in work schedule, and especially if you're in a high-stress job, somebody who's responsible for literally billions of dollars of government money that they're trying to distribute around the world. That could be a pretty high-stress job. So I think that in some cases, they just need a change. But in other types of jobs, like I know a lot of law enforcement officers or intelligence employees, they retire from their federal job and they get a similar job with a government contractor or in the private sector. So for some people, they kind of like that second career to help, you know, pay off the mortgage and get everything in order financially, and that helps them get that extra boost. But there are many people who just like to retire and work to have the extra income and to do something totally different from their federal careers.
Do you think it's made a difference if you're retiring under the civil service retirement system, seeking post-retirement income versus under FERS?
To some extent, yes, because the old civil service system was a single benefit plan. So with that system, you had generally, if you spent a full career in federal service, you had enough income coming in every month that was your retirement. And for the most part, the tradition under civil service was you came into federal service right out of school, whether it was college or high school. You worked your way up through the ranks. You stayed in federal service at least 30 years, if not 40. And then you retired to whatever you wanted to do, whether it was leisure or caregiving or whatever that life after retirement was going to look like. The newer retirement system under FERS, the whole system was set up to be more portable. So we see many more federal employees coming into federal service as their encore career. They get hired in their 50s and 60s. We see many more federal employees leaving without 30 years of service. So they sometimes have to work a second career so that they have enough accumulation of retirement funds so they can live out their retirement comfortably. So it's a whole different mindset with this new system because it's made up of three things. You have a smaller government pension. You pay into Social Security, so you have a lot of flexibility as to when you claim your Social Security benefit. And then, my goodness, the savings, right? You know, we see a lot of federal employees under FERS who are just surprised at themselves and how much they've been able to accumulate. And so that's a nice pot of money that has so many options for it. And one of those options is to let it grow. So if they're working that encore career, that's another maybe 5, maybe 10 years where that money can continue to multiply and compound.
Does the added years in which you may contribute to Social Security through your second career play into, let's say, the windfall elimination provision that you're getting extra quarters under Social Security? Can that sometimes mitigate the problem you have with the WEP?
Absolutely. Yep. So the windfall provision, this would be what applies to our folks under CSRS who didn't pay into Social Security as federal employees, but then they have that Encore career. They may have had jobs before they came to federal service. They may have served in the military. So there were opportunities where they did pay into Social Security. But as a result of this windfall provision, their Social Security benefits are computed under a modified formula. You can get around the windfall. You can be exempt from it if you can squeeze in, I know this is a lot of service, but if you can squeeze in 30 years of Social Security covered work that's on a more substantial earnings basis. Now, that's not going to happen for most people, but let's say you had 20 years. Maybe you had a career in the military and then you came into civil service. Working another 4 or 5 years in the private sector could give you 5 years less of that reduction for the windfall. So it really will help. Let alone the fact that those extra years of paying into Social Security are going to be counted in the calculation of your benefit. Because unlike our federal retirement, Social Security doesn't use the high three. Social Security computes your benefit on 35 years of earnings. So if you only paid into Social Security for 10 or 20 years, that gives you about 20 or 25 years of zeros in that benefit calculation. So every year that you work would eliminate one of the zeros and could possibly eliminate some of that windfall reduction.
For those who are under FERS, who retire from federal service, let's say before Social Security eligibility, which might be 67, 68, whatever the eligibility age at that point, seeking a second career, do they sort of squander the opportunity for the FERS supplement that they might have otherwise been entitled to?
Yeah, so under FERS, let me set up an example where you have an employee who's 57 or 58 years old. They've already spent 30 years in federal service. So when they retire, in addition to that FERS pension, that government pension benefit, which is going to be paid for life, they get a supplemental benefit. It's kind of meant to bridge the time between their retirement and Social Security, and that ends at age 62, actually. It ends when you're first eligible for Social Security. So I get this question, just like you asked me, Bob, where somebody will say, well, I don't want to go back to work because then I'm going to lose the supplement because that extra supplemental payment is subject to an earnings limit. So if you make too much money, they're just going to take it away. You'll lose it. So some people look at it that way, saying, well, I'm just not going to go back to work because that way I can collect that supplement for those 5 years. But if you're going to go back to work so that you can make enough money to set aside more money in savings, to avoid taking money out of your TSP account for the next 5 years, to maybe even delay taking Social Security till you're 67 instead of 62, I think that more than makes up for that supplemental benefit. So I think it depends on the person as far as how much they plan to earn in retirement, how well prepared they are financially to retire at age 57 or 58. Now, that's a fairly young age for many people to have to live out another 20 or 30 or even 4 decades of trying to make those savings last that much time and taking Social Security at a reduced level. So that really will vary from person to person. But I do think there's certainly reasons why somebody could forfeit that supplement and come out ahead by either delaying their retirement or working that Encore career.
So what issues should a postal retiree consider before taking a job in retirement? I mean, what are the upsides, downsides? Are there any downsides?
Yeah, you have to realize that if you're going to go back to work, and especially if you don't do it right away, if you've already filed for Social Security, there is an earnings limit, just like there is to the FERS supplement, until you reach the full retirement age. And if you were born in 1960 or later, that age is 67. So I knew a guy who went back to work, he retired, he claimed his Social Security at age 62. He had a little part-time job that kind of blossomed and he started making some really good money, never thinking of the fact that his Social Security benefits should be reduced now that he's making much better wages. So he never called Social Security to let them know he was going back to work. In the meantime, Social Security gets the wage report, so they find out how much you're earning. So when they finally caught up with him, he had been overpaid $36,000 in Social Security retirement, and he got a letter from Social Security wanting the money back in 30 days. And obviously, he wasn't prepared to do that. So what happens instead is your Social Security benefit now gets suspended until you pay back that money through suspended payments. So there are earnings limits on both the FERS supplement as well as Social Security up until you're usually until 67. But the other thing is, like you said, there's a lot of upsides. There's just the satisfaction, mental benefits of working after retirement. I'm not talking about backbreaking labor, but something that brings you satisfaction, brings you some reward, brings you some extra income can also come in handy as well. So those things are all good. If you do happen to go back to federal employment, that's where you have to be a little careful. Because if you retire from federal service voluntarily, meaning that you didn't go out on disability, you didn't have your job abolished, you just decided it was time to retire, and then later you find another opportunity to go back and do federal work, you're going to be called a reemployed annuitant. And in those situations, your new salary is going to be offset by the amount of your retirement benefit. So you'd only be working for the difference. And in most cases, there's not a lot of incentive to do that. So you want to make sure if you take government work in retirement that you have that discussion to find out how will this affect my retirement and more so how will it affect my new salary. If you can find a job that will not offset your salary, then that might be a thing to do. Like we see a lot of federal retirees who every 10 years help count the population. They become Census Bureau enumerators and they hold back a certain number of positions for retirees to do that without that salary offset. Or maybe your desire is to go to one of the big national parks and spend a season there and become a park ranger. Well, there are certain positions there where you can take those positions as a federal employee and it will not cause that salary offset. But make sure of that because that doesn't mean all positions. That means certain positions are available for that kind of work.
Yeah, I know the Bureau of the Census does a pretty aggressive recruiting.
They do amongst
retired postal employees, particularly folks who worked as letter carriers, because they know where people live and they know how to talk.
They know how to do it. I never thought of that. That's so true.
For those who are retiring under FERS who've reached the regular retirement age, 67, their Social Security is not offset. They are not penalized for working.
That's right. You can make as much money as you want after 67 and still collect Social Security. In fact, a case in point would be President Biden and Jill Biden. They both collect Social Security benefits, obviously still working full time, and the earnings doesn't affect the benefit at all. So that's why we pay into Social Security so that we can collect the benefit from it in our years after retirement. Close to retirement.
Are there tax implications to seeking post-retirement employment?
Well, yes, there are for sure. A couple of things to keep in mind as far as tax planning, if you're going to do something like this, is the fact that number one, if you're over 65, there's a good chance that you're paying Medicare Part B premiums. And the going rate for Medicare Part B this year is $164.90 a month per person. But if your income goes above a certain threshold, then you get to pay more. And there's several of those thresholds as your income gets higher. So be careful about having that extra income, especially if it's just a little part-time job that could push you a little bit over that threshold. Now you've got to pay an extra $100 a month for Medicare Part B, which might take away some of the joy you found in that part-time job. So that's one thing. Medicare premiums are now income-based. They call it IRMA, income-related monthly adjustment amount. You know, they have to have a fancy name for it. But if you make too much money after age 65, you get the privilege of paying more for Medicare Part B. And then for other tax things you have to keep in mind is that if you do delay taking money out of your TSP account, you know, the minimum required distribution age is moving from 73 for our younger employees up to 75 years old. So that's a long time to be able to compound and accumulate income Well, keep in mind that at some point you're going to have to take out those required distributions, which again is going to force you into taking out more income to push your income into a possibly a higher marginal tax bracket, as well as those Medicare rates. And then finally, with Social Security retirement, there are a lot of Americans who receive Social Security benefits totally tax-free. That's typically not a lot of our federal retirees, because those who get Social Security tax-free, unfortunately, are people who mostly live on just Social Security retirement. So as a result of a government pension, having some savings, maybe even having some additional income from work, that may push you into this situation where you're going to be paying tax on not only 50% of your Social Security, but even up to 85% of it. So nobody pays tax on all of their benefit. You can still get the 15% tax-free, but you know, you may find yourself going from only tax on half of it, and now because of your extra income, now you got to pay tax on 85% of it. Yeah, there are tax implications for sure.
Well, let me ask you something about Medicare. Beginning in 2025, postal employees will be integrated into Medicare. We're not going to talk about the whole discussion about Medicare integration, but I'm curious. You retire in 2025, but you become employed by another employer who may, in fact, offer health benefits through their employment also. Mm-hmm. Can you defer Part B if you're going from federal employment with FEHB to an employer who offers, who may, in fact, offer you health benefits? Because ordinarily, if an employer provides health benefits, you could sort of not enroll in Medicare Part B. You could delay Medicare Part B enrollment.
Right. So Bob, what you're talking about is, let's use a federal employee first, and then I'm going to answer your question because I want to kind of lead into that. So let's say you're a federal employee, you turn 65, or your spouse turns 65, but you carry the health insurance as an employee. Because you have current employment health insurance coverage through your federal government employment, that allows you to delay enrolling in Medicare Part B until you retire. In fact, you'll have 8 months following your retirement called your special enrollment period for you and even your spouse who's covered under your health plan to pick up Part B with no late penalty. So you could be 70 years old and pay the same rate that you would have paid if you had been 65 years old. Now, what you're asking is, okay, I've retired now from federal service. I have my FEHB, that's my lifetime health insurance, and I go right back to work. And now I turn 65, I'm still working, but my new employer does offer health insurance. Now, the question is, am I going to take it? I might enroll in it to have that ability to, again, delay Part B enrollment. As long as I'm working for an employer who has more than 20 employees, it has to be a fairly large employer. So if I'm covered under their health benefit plan and I'm still employed, then I still have that same right to delay Medicare without penalty. However, if I go to a job that offers health insurance, but I say, no thanks, I've got my own health insurance, then I'm still going to fall under the provisions where if I don't take Medicare, I'll be penalized for that late enrollment. So it depends on whether you're actually covered by that current employment coverage.
Okay, that's
complicated, right?
It is complicated. I sat through a presentation done by what it was called the SHIP, the State Health Insurance Program. To see what they have to say about it, and it is extremely complicated. So people need to pay very careful attention. Let me ask a final question. Any last thoughts about what specific issue, if there's a main issue one should consider about whether or not to be employed after you retire from federal or postal service, what should that issue be?
Oh, that's a good question, because I can think of a lot of things to think about as you're planning that second career. And a lot of it depends on exactly what are you looking for. Are you looking for something to do? Are you looking for something to supplement your retirement income because you maybe did retire a little sooner and you want to make sure that everything lasts as long as you do? You may also want to look at the tax planning. I think all retirees, even those who are still working for the government who are planning to retire, pay attention to taxes, because one of the reasons why we save that money in the thrift is because we assume that we're in a higher tax bracket while we're working, then we'll be in retirement. That's sometimes not the case, especially for folks who work a full-time second career. So tax planning is very important consideration. Look at your age. If you're old enough for Medicare, consider that employment income, how it's going to impact your Medicare premium. That's very important as well, because those premium increases are pretty substantial. But on the other hand, you know, if you love what you do and you found something that you're good at and you can share that with other people, of course, go for that second career and encore career. It can be very rewarding. And I like people to feel like no one's pressuring me to retire. So if I want to do something like that, I'm going to do it. That might be the key to living out a much happier life after retirement, or at least a transition to that full-time retirement life. I think that's a good stepping stone. It's a way to phase into retirement, even though you're not still working for the government.
Okay, I want to thank Tammy Flanagan, founder of Retire Federal, for joining me on this week's NAPS Chat. Thank you, Tammy.
Well, thank you so much, Bob, for having me, and I appreciate that, and I hope everyone is planning for a long, healthy retirement.
I hope so, too. If you enjoy NAPS Chat, please leave a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store, and more important, tell your friends to download our podcast and listen in. Be well and be safe.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe.